Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. Today, my guest is Nicole Thompson. Nicole is an Air Force veteran and a military spouse, and she's here today to discuss how military life impacts the lives of military children who, unfortunately, are an oftentimes forgotten piece of the equation.
Welcome to the show, Nicole. I'm really glad to have you here. What, for the listeners and the viewers who aren't familiar with you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me. So I'm an author, a retired school psychologist. I'm also the founder of GOAT Educators, and that's a business that focuses on professional developments to provide educators and teachers trauma-informed care. And I got here because of the trauma that I went through in my life as a child. I experienced a lot of trauma with it. I would say ending, you know, the worst of it ending with my mom actually dying of suicide when I was 8 years old. So I wanted to help children that look like me to get them through those types of experiences.
And that's such a tragedy for any child to go through. But, you know, today we're talking about the impact of military life on military children who are often overlooked in the big picture when it comes to, you know, veterans care and things like that. So there's so many things that go on with the military children, just in the dealing with military life, things like the frequent moves that they have to go through. On average, the military children move about 6 to 9 times during their education. And that can lead to all sorts of challenges. It could be academic, social challenges. And in your experience as an Air Force veteran, what are some of the challenges that come along with some of these moves?
So actually, just the feeling of safety for the child, if you're moving that many times, they don't feel safe because they don't ever get grounded, if that makes sense. Because as soon as they're settling in and meeting friends, then they're moving again. So it's really important for the adults in their lives to really focus on providing that safety for them. So they know that, you know, even if they're moving constantly, their parents are there and the ones that are most closest to them are there to provide them that safety net that they need so often, because it's really important in their development.
Yeah, absolutely. And having that safety net and that social network of not like a Facebook social network, but that network of people that they can rely on, that's a constant in their lives, their parents, their siblings, those people who are in their lives when they're moving around constantly, is super important to have, because otherwise they probably feel like they're all alone. And the problem compounds itself, though, I would imagine, when you have military children who not only are moving from place to place every couple of years, but they also they end up dealing with parents who get deployed, and they end up not having those people that you were just talking about who are their foundation, the rock that they need to rely on. They may not have them for 6 months, a year, even, you know, other times they may be away for training. It might be away for several weeks or months at a time. That just makes the problem even worse. So, you know, what are ways that some children can find some support during this time? And what ways can the parents who are left behind during these deployments, how can they support them during this time?
And I'm actually glad you said that, because when I was married to my husband, he was in the Army, I was in the Air Force, and he was deployed every single year. So it was at one point, my daughter was so young and he was deployed for a year. When he came back, she didn't know who he was. So I had to be there as that support to say, no, you know, this is your dad. It's okay to go to him, because she was like, you know, who is this man? And that was before FaceTime and all. So I really do encourage, like, as much as possible, you keep in touch with your children on FaceTime. You let them know that you are there, even though you're far away. And if they need you for anything, that you can be there for them in that way. And the parent that is caring for them also have to be aware that they may be behaviors that the children may start to demonstrate, like regressive behavior. So if the child is, let's say, 11 years old, and then all of a sudden they're wetting the bed again, the parent has to show that kid grace, because it may be a way of their body coping with that level of stress, because it's difficult for adults. So you can imagine how difficult it is for children. So just to be there and always show them grace and let them know that you understand that they're going through what they're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even another side of this whole equation here is, like, when I was deployed, I had a newborn. He was only a couple months old when I deployed to Afghanistan. And when I came home, I had never been a father before. He was my first son. And I didn't know how to be a father. My wife had had like about 9 months or so of parenting under her belt. So she kind of figured out as she went along, as all parents do. But for me, it was difficult. And I felt like I was just being tossed in the deep end. And I can imagine how other parents who are coming back from a deployment, they miss a year of their child's life, all the milestones and graduations and birthdays and holidays, all these other things that might take place during that time period. They may be coming back and feeling like they don't know really what to do with their child or how to act around their child or any of that type of stuff. And that could be a really difficult thing for them to do, right?
Yes, absolutely. And again, I would say just being understanding on every level, from the parents, because again, it's hard being a military wife, because you're pretty much thrown into single parenthood whenever, you know, the dad moves away. And you can get really resentful. And I'm speaking for myself. You can get really resentful for the parent not being there, because you feel as though I'm doing it all on my own. But you have to remind yourself that although the father isn't there at the time, they're out defending the country, and it's a part of the job. And really, if you find support groups for the parents, because there's plenty of them out there, I believe that would get you through it. But you have to constantly remind yourself of that they're not just absent and don't want to be around. It's part of the duty. And when they do come back, there's really no other way of saying it, but sort of kind of like spoon feed them the parent responsibilities, because it can be overwhelming. And I know as the parent that's being left behind, you just want to say, here's the kid, I need a break. But you have to remember that that's just not best practice. So, you know, just ease the other parent into it. Like, maybe you watch the kid 5 minutes at a time and then slowly increase it until they get to a level where they're actually feeling comfortable enough to be the parent.
Yeah. And I love how you put that, because that's exactly what my wife did. Was she, when I got home, she just continued doing all the things that she was doing all the time that I was gone. And she allowed me to step into the parent role as I started getting comfortable with it. I was dealing with a lot of stuff when I came home, and it was a lot to just be, you know, thrown in as a parent. And, you know, so she kind of just showed me, kind of led by example, showed me what I'm supposed to do, you know, even stuff like simple things like changing a diaper or feeding the baby. Like, it was just something I hadn't done yet very often. And so it wasn't stuff that I was familiar with. And, you know, so yeah, that's exactly what ended up happening. But, you know, even dealing with, you know, older children, maybe in teenage years, they may be dealing with stuff at school that they didn't deal with before the parent deployed. And it's a difficult thing, right? So, you know, I really do enjoy that part that you just talked about there is, you know, allowing the parent to ease back into it, just spoon feed it, or, you know, whatever way you want to think about it. It really does make a whole lot of sense to me that that you would slowly get them back into this after you know, deployment or even just a long time away. It doesn't necessarily have to be a deployment, but it could be, you know, going away to a school or going to some training that takes, you know, a couple months or whatever. Things do change rather quickly sometimes at home, right?
Yes, it does. And we always have to be there for our children to let them know, like, you know, our situation is just really unpredictable, you know, but it's part of the job. And again, just be there for them as much as we can. In terms of anxiety, because children from military families always have anxiety because they never really know when things are going to change. I would definitely say as a parent to model being calm, because they're looking to the parent at all times, whether you're aware of it or not. So if the parent is anxious and, you know, every day they're having panic attacks or whatever the case, then, you know, the child is going to pick up on that. So I would say make it like a daily family thing where you come together and you say, you know, that you feel safe, you feel welcome, and that everything is okay. And just to constantly give yourself that daily reminder so you won't let all those anxious thoughts take over and then it overcomes you. And I also say always be open to seeking therapy, individual and family therapy, of course.
Yeah, that's a great point too, because sometimes when you're sitting there and you're feeling overwhelmed and you feel like you're in over your head with all of this stuff, you might not even think about the therapy aspect of it, because who has time for it? You have all these other things that you have to do, and that's just a difficult thing to squeeze into the schedule, but it may be necessary too. So yeah, definitely be open to that. Nicole, there are some realities that come along with the military service that doesn't necessarily come along with regular, typical family life. Military children have to, unfortunately, sometimes experience traumas that their civilian family doesn't necessarily always have to deal with. You know, things related to their parents' service, like injuries, disabilities, even unfortunately, deaths are occurring. So, what kind of approaches can help children deal with some of these experiences?
I would say just to let the child know that you are there. A lot of times when we're parents, we want to come in and fix everything, but you have to think about the child and cater you or how you approach the child to that specific child. So it may be that you have a child that want to talk about everything that's going on and feel very comfortable in doing so. So if that's the case, you just sit there and you listen to the child for as long as possible. But it also may be that the child doesn't want to talk, and talking would just make them feel even worse. So you just have to let them know, sit down and talk. You know, the family is going through this. Your dad or your mom is going for this amount of time. I'm here if you need any extra support. I'm here if you need more support than I can actually provide. I'll get you the help that you need. And we do have to think of therapy as not squeezing it in, but as a part of our daily routine or our weekly routine. Because when we think of it that way and make enough time for therapy, then we're showing our children that our mental health is important. It's not an afterthought, especially in the military. Your mental health has to be priority at all times, because if not, your body is going to, you know, you're going to demonstrate it through certain behaviors, or you'll develop different diseases. And most of the diseases that occur, we don't think that they're related to trauma, but they actually are. And some examples in children are asthma, depression. Of course, children can develop post-traumatic stress disorder as well, anxiety, being a perfectionist. So it's just so many things that we have to think about and be on the lookout for. If we see these behaviors in our child, you know, bump up that support.
Absolutely. And when you're dealing with these types of traumas, it could be a disability, an injury, or even unfortunately a death. All of these things that happen have a profound impact on just everybody that has to deal with it. But the children who are still so young, figuring out life, figuring out the world around them, it's a lot to wrap your head around. And so that is something that, like you were saying, definitely go get that support. Go get the mental health treatments. Go get whatever it is that you think that you need to be able to navigate through all of this difficult time. And it doesn't necessarily even have to be as extreme as what we're talking about. Just having the parent being away for a while could be enough of a stress to the child that they need that extra little bit of support. So you're absolutely right. I do agree with what you're saying there. And making it part of the routine is definitely something that will help make it be able to fit into the schedule, as opposed to just being something that is, seen as this extra burden that you have to do. You know, it's part of the schedule. You know, you wake up and it's part of your routine, and you do this thing, whether it's once a week or however frequently it is. It's just something that you end up doing, right? Yeah. So when you're talking about a military family, there's always, you know, this dynamic. You got to juggle, family life, taking kids to school, to sports and other activities that they may be involved in. What are some of the ways that people can balance supporting military children during these times of stress? I know, being there for them is obviously one thing, but there's, there's maybe more that they need. What are some ways that we can support them and help them out through some of these difficult times?
I would definitely say, like, schedule in a time where it's just you and the child, where it's quality time. You don't have any phones. You're not accepting any messages or anything. And really get out in nature. Nature is a healer. And if we stay out in nature, maybe go around barefoot and ground ourselves, make sure that they're eating healthy and really keeping them moving and active. Because being active allows those stress hormones and everything to stay low. So, if we're ruminating in the house, just binge watching TV, then the stressors are going to become worse. Our diet is going to become worse and things are just going to worsen all around. So I say just be active. Get out there in nature as much as possible. Show your children different breathing techniques or meditation or other ways that you could come up to calm your nervous system, because having a calm nervous system is really key in helping the child cope with the parent being away. Because if their nervous system is in fight, flight, or freeze, and they're constantly in survival mode, then you're going to see it with the behaviors. They may be impulsive. They, may be inattentive. And when you're starting to notice some of those things, just remember, hey, it's time to get outside. Or think about, are you letting them eat a whole bunch of comfort food? Because that's human nature. We get stressed out. We eat a whole bunch of comfort foods. And then the next thing you know, we're feeling like crap. So keep nutritious foods in the refrigerator and, at hand at all time.
And that it's such an easy thing to do, too, is, if you are looking for a snack at home and you have a bowl of fruit on the counter, apples and bananas and other good foods and fruits, versus if you had cookies in a cookie jar, you're gonna go to the fruit if it's available to you and if it's sitting out in the open. If you go tuck it away in the refrigerator somewhere, you're gonna end up going to the thing that's just more convenient. It's in your face. It's easier to see. So it's just a real easy kind of mind trick to just keep stuff out in front of everybody. It's definitely keeping active is way better than just sitting on the couch watching TV, especially when you're talking about maybe a parent's deployed overseas. I know my wife, when I was deployed, she did not watch the news hardly at all because she just didn't want to deal with knowing what's going on overseas when I was over there, because bad stuff happens. She knew bad stuff happens. It's part of war. And she didn't want to be sitting there watching that, worrying constantly about what was happening to me, where I was, what I was doing, all that kind of stuff. And could you imagine what a child's mind would be thinking about if they're sitting there and they see the news on, even if it's just on in the background as you're making dinner or something like that, right? Like, you start seeing bad stuff that's happening overseas and it's like, well, mom's over there, dad's over there. What's happening to them? Is that where they are? And their mind starts racing, and that just makes things worse. So yeah, get outside, and it serves as a distraction. Keep you away from all that negativity, right?
Yes, and I absolutely agree with not watching the news. Do not watch it. Seriously. I mean, when you think about it, that's the reason that causes so much anxiety in general. For some reason, people are just obsessed with watching the news all the time and consuming all of that bad news and negative energy. And the more that you cannot watch the news and watch uplifting things, because we become what we consume. whether that's through TV, eating, or however it is we're consuming. So we have to be mindful of that. And I definitely commend your wife because it seems like she was doing a lot of things correctly.
And you know what? It's one of those things where, just like parenting, there's no handbook that comes with how to be a military spouse or a military child and dealing with deployments. I mean, they had these class type things that we all went through it before we deployed. And so they gave us some idea of what to expect, you know, how long we're going to be gone, what happens, how do you get notified if something happens to us, or, you know, all those kind of things. They told us all about those things, but, you know, the day-to-day stuff, you know, don't constantly watch the news and dwell on that stuff. They didn't go over all that stuff. It's just stuff that you kind of figure out on your own along the way. And, you know, I think for the people out there, especially who are dealing with a lot of stress when their loved ones are deployed or they're, you know, away for extended periods of time, just cut that stuff out. You don't need to be constantly watching the news and being up to date on every single thing that's going on, because it's going to drive you nuts. It's just too much. And especially, again, for the children, which is kind of like the core of what we're talking about here. I know in my case, my son was so young that he wouldn't have known the difference. He didn't hardly even know me at that time because he was so young. But even still, like, the children, they learn from watching the parents. And if the parent is constantly stressed out, then the children are going to be constantly stressed out. And that's just not helpful for anybody.
Yeah, I really do encourage for the parents and the kids. Of course, if the kids are old enough, to just get some creative outlets as well. That could be journaling. In many cases, I know my kids like to write creative stories. So just encourage your children to write creative stories. Let them escape from reality for a while and just use their imagination. Coloring, things of that sort. Really just providing them with different activities, you know, to keep their mind off of their parents not being there.
Yeah. And I like what you were saying there too, as far as creative activities, things that they're creating things where it's, you know, writing a short story or a poem or coloring, painting, those types of things. Even if they are into music, they pick up an instrument and play those things. All of those things are great outlets versus things like maybe that are a little bit easier, like a video game or things like that, because those don't really add any value. You know, you're not exercising your mind necessarily. You're doing these things, but it's just not the best. It's not the best thing for your mental health, for your overall well-being. These things just don't really help, especially if you're dealing with a Call of Duty type game that is just gonna make you worry even more about what could be happening to mom or dad who's deployed, right? That's not the best outlet.
Yeah. And I know I played Call of Duty once and I just, it triggered me. I was just like, you know, it was way too realistic. So I would definitely recommend staying away from games like Call of Duty. And of course, video games are out there. I don't say don't let your kids play video games, but just put a time limit on it and make sure that they're not playing a game that are going to make them feel worse or make them worry even more. You know, because video games are one way that kids communicate with each other online. They're able to talk to each other and all. So I do say let them have video games every now and again, but definitely keep a time limit on it because that could become an addiction. Video game addiction is real. And once you get that, it's really hard to break out of. So yeah, I say allow it, but just keep some time limit.
Yeah, that's true. And we even have like one of those egg timers, the thing that you just kind of crank it, set the time. And, you know, when it goes off, the game's off and that's it. So you have your timer, you have your limit. That's all it is. And when it's not an addictive type thing, then it's really easy. But once when you cross that line and the kids are addicted to it, then yeah, it becomes a little bit harder to pull them away from it. One of the things I wanted to talk about was just addressing the emotional needs of the military children and how they may be dealing with things like isolation, feeling lonely and disconnected for a variety of reasons. The frequent moves, not having a stable friend base that they can rely on. So What are ways that educators, they're teachers in school, especially the ones on military bases or who serve a military community, or their parents and people around them can support those emotional needs of the military children who are going through there? Are there any programs or counseling, things like that, that might be available?
There's local support groups for sure, but for the educators, I would say definitely focusing on relationships. When we focus on building relationships, then no matter really how long you know the person, you feel comfortable with opening up to them. And once you get that bond, that relationship, then that makes the, again, going back to safety, that makes the children feel safe and safe enough to learn. Because if they don't feel safe enough to learn, their prefrontal cortex, which is up here in the front of the brain, actually shuts down and it doesn't allow them to learn. So I think for educators, that's number one priority, relationships. With the parents, I would say just always stepping out of your comfort zone. Sometimes when we're moving so much, we're like, okay, we'll only be here for 6 months. I don't really need to know anybody because we'll be in and out. But don't think that. Constantly get out into the community and look for those support groups, like I said, where you can surround yourself with like-minded people and people that are going through the same exact thing that you are, because then their understanding of your needs and your emotional support and all that you need. Because a lot of times what we as humans and kids need, it's just the love of someone to be there for us and to understand what we're going through so we won't feel isolated. Because when you think about when you're going through something difficult, if someone that you're talking to on the phone say, oh my gosh, I just went through that like last week, it makes you feel better immediately. So right. When your children are around other children that are going through it and they're able to share stories and different things, it makes them feel more welcome in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And that community support is a big piece. When I moved into the neighborhood that I live in now, it's near an Air Force base. And there was a military family there. They move every 2 years. And they were there. I think they were already there for a year when we moved in. And but we got to know them and they made it a point. They said every time they move to a new place to get to know the neighbors in the neighborhood. Even though they know that they're only going to be there for a short period of time, get to know people. And, they had young children or about my kid's age, a little bit older, and but not by much. And they were able to meet up at the parks near our house and play together and ride bikes and do all the things that kids normally do, go outside, get dirty, have fun, all that kind of stuff. Even though they knew that they were going to be gone a year after that, they're going to be moving off to the next duty station that they're going to be stationed at, but they did that anyways, and they made those relationships. They didn't just stick to themselves. What's the point of making these relationships? We're just going to move, but that kind of mindset didn't fly with them. They were out there making the relationships and seeking them out, because if they just stuck in their house, which I know other people in our neighborhood who did exactly that, and they came and they left, and we never even got to meet them because they just stuck to themselves. And if they did that, they wouldn't have that community support. And mm-hmm. God forbid something was to happen to one of them, they wouldn't have people nearby who were able to help them. They were from all over the country, and they wouldn't have had that support. So yeah, definitely getting out there and making those connections and getting that support within the community, I think is super important too.
Yeah. And I just think that we have to remember at all times that we're social beings. And when we isolate ourselves, that's when we tend to get depressed and have other mental health issues. So if you're constantly out and communicating with everyone and focused on building a community, that really does help a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And making that, that network, that community of people, it just makes it so much better, because like you're saying, we're social people. We need to have that community. We need to have those people in our lives. And we rely on that when things are good, things are bad. We rely on having those people there to get us through those times that may be difficult. And when things are good, we want people there to celebrate them with us as well. So yeah, just, you know, having those people around, I know social media makes it a little bit easier to isolate yourself from physically being with people. You can just FaceTime people, or you can, just send them a message and that type of stuff. But it's not the same as when you are together and you can sit down and have dinner together, or, you know, you can get outside and go for a walk together, ride your bikes and do all that kind of stuff that people do. So it's definitely, a great thing to have is in that community.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, Nicole, before we wrap up here, can you let people know where they can go to find out more about you? I know you said you're an author and you talked a little bit about your business in the beginning of this episode, but tell people a little bit more about, where they can go to find your book, what the books are and your business.
Yeah. And so my book, Reach to Teach, 7 Simple Trauma-Informed Steps to Help Urban Students Engage, Improve Grades, and Decrease Disruptive Behaviors Overnight, that can be found on Amazon. And it talks about building relationships and really prioritizing a student's mental health to get the best academic performance from them. Again, that's on Amazon. My website is goateducators.com. That's G-O-A-T educators.com. And in terms of social media, I'm on pretty much every platform, but I'm most active on Instagram as Goat Educators.
And so on the show notes for this episode, we'll try to put all those links in there as well. Nicole, I think this episode is especially important because, we don't often think about the children when we're talking about caring for veterans, when we're talking about helping the military out. Oftentimes the children are forgotten. And so that's something I definitely don't want to do. I think that's an important piece of the equation. They're part of the family just as much as anybody else. And I think caring for them and taking care of their needs is going to be something that we definitely need to do a better job at. And in this, the advice that you gave in this episode, I think, is super important. And so I really thank you and appreciate you taking the time to come on and join us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Scott. And whenever we're talking about kids, I'm there for you.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Son, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.